Alrighty, testing, testing, 1, 2, 3, sound check. Is the sound okay? I just want to confirm that. Hi everyone. It's been a while. It's been a long time since I've done a live stream. So just want to make sure everything's good. How is everyone doing? How is everyone doing today? Just wanted to give some updates. It's been a long time now. And for one, I got banned on TikTok, permanently banned. Okay, beautiful. Thank you, Gerardo. Beautifully, beautiful sound. Good. I'm completely and utterly banned on TikTok. So that's pretty common, I guess. Not to be not a surprise there. Abdullah Gondal is permanently banned on Twitter. So yeah, it's not a good month. I wasn't even using TikTok, so I've been a little bit busy with other things, work and other stuff like that. I just decided, let me make a video on TikTok about Ramadan. I made a video on YouTube about Ramadan, and I said, yeah, let me just share some thoughts about why I don't like Ramadan. You don't have to like Ramadan. It's a month in the year. I mean, it's my opinion. I don't like it, and I said why I don't like it. And next thing you know, boom, I was banned from TikTok. It says the quality is low. Okay, 144. Let me see if I can figure out what is going on. Is everybody else having a hard time with the quality? I'm supposed to be streaming in 1080p here. I'm seeing some people are saying that quality is really bad. Let me know. Let me know. Anyways, I mean, hopefully it's just a couple of people, not everybody. Yeah, so TikTok is one, Twitter is the other. Abdullah Gondal had a post about some of the hate in, I guess, hate in the Quran or something like that. And unfortunately, it's a high risk post, I guess, because Twitter, doesn't understand sarcasm. It doesn't understand that, it doesn't understand when you're making a point using, like, oh, non-Muslims are the dumbest people. They might actually think that we're trying to say that non-Muslims are the dumbest people, even though that's not what we're saying. I mean, we're saying that's what the Quran is saying. So yeah, that's basically what happened. Me, on the other hand, I was on TikTok. I wasn't even using TikTok barely, and that's what happened. Sorry, I just respond to something. Yeah, so it's kind of ridiculous. Why is the quality? It says if you're on Wi-Fi. Am I on Wi-Fi? I'm not on Wi-Fi. Let me just take a look. No, I'm not on Wi-Fi at all. Why is it doing this to me? Why is it doing this to me? Yeah, my internet seems perfectly fast. Let me give me 1 second. I'm gonna come back and see if it comes back better. Okay, hopefully it's better now. Thank you for the super chat. Passus erit vobiscum. That's a difficult name to pronounce. Ruthless, very sad indeed. Abu Layth and TikTok ban. Was Abu Layth? Oh, I think what you mean by Abu Layth is what happened to Abu Layth. So Abu Layth was attacked by Muslim gangsters in his house. Muhammad Hijab made a video saying that Abu Layth is, very hot-headed video like Muhammad Hijab usually does. And there's a jinn in here. And what happened was, after he made this video attacking Abu Layth, the next thing you know, a bunch of people banged down his door and were scaring him, scaring his wife and his daughters. Now, as you guys know, in Islam, women wear hijab, and even if it's not Islam, just let's just say in general, sometimes people are not dressed appropriately. Muslim men should understand the concept of haya more than anybody else. You would think that, there's a Muslim woman in this house, even if they don't like Abu Layth, well, his daughters might not be dressed appropriately for strange men to come in the house. Like I said, even if it wasn't like a Muslim hijab issue, just like, they might not be comfortable, they might not be dressed according to how, they're expecting, basically guests, uninvited guests, right? And apparently they were shouting at him and saying, shouting at his kids, you should support Palestine. And they're like, yeah, we do support Palestine, like basically criminals, like criminal behavior. And the dumbest thing of all is that they recorded this thing. They're so proud of being basically gangsters, like scum. They're so proud of being scum that they came and behaved this way. Yeah, am I still, is my quality still bad? Okay, give me 1 second. I'm going to pause my camera. Give me 1 second. So I think the problem with the stream is not on my end. I checked my cables and everything is fine. And that's why I wanted to do a test, because I don't want to go live with, you know, and interviewing someone and it turns out that there's a problem, but I don't think there's anything I can do on my end, unfortunately. So because it does look like everything on my end should be fine. Let me try lowering it to 720p just to see if that helps. Okay, I'm going to lower my camera to 720p. I did that. And let me check the settings here. Oh, I can't change it because it's already live. That is unfortunate. I apologize for that. But anyways, as long as you can hear me, that's all that matters, I think. Yeah, anyhow. So yeah, poor Abu Layth, he's Muslim. He's obviously Muslim. He's not the type of Muslim that, you know, he's not a Muhammad hijab type Muslim. He's much more nuanced in his views. And he, you know, he has his own opinions on things, some of which I think some, you know, obviously Muslims won't agree with, right? So it's unfortunate that even as a, if a Muslim can be treated this way, and he, you know, he clarified some of his stances, he clarified what he was saying, that, you know, that this was his opinion, was taken out of context. He does support Palestine and all that. And he's not at all, you know, his position is clear that he supports Palestine. So, you know, obviously there's something going on that's, you know, people are demonizing him. Muhammad Hijab is obviously pretty much responsible for this. Muhammad Hijab did say, I don't agree with what these guys did, but you know, he's like, this is unfortunately, look at the community. All you got to do is say, look what this guy said. And the next thing you know, people are banging down your door and going into your house in the UK, in London. Like, this is not cool at all. If this is how bad the community is, that you can just say a couple of things and they turn into bloodthirsty, basically gangsters banging down the door of another Muslim. I mean, that's just sad. I mean, obviously Abu Layth, you know, if I was him, I wouldn't want to live over there anymore. I wouldn't want to live in a community with people like that. I hope that, you know, he finds peace, his family finds peace with what happened. It's obviously not easy. Pakis et Wobiskam, if that's what you were not referring to about Abu Layth, then let me know. Hamas can keep the Twitter account. Yeah, I don't know how that works. I don't know what Hamas is doing, or if they're allowing it for a reason so they can keep an eye on them. Obviously, there's probably something else going on there. I don't know anything about why. What's my stance on the Israel-Palestine ban? Do you mean the war? Yeah, anyhow, Israel and Palestine is complicated. And, you know, I don't really understand the situation. I don't understand the politics behind the situation. I do think that it's a very one-sided situation. Hamas is not helping the situation by shooting rockets. Basically, the rockets are garbage. The homemade rockets, they're not going to hurt anybody, as far as I know. Israel has this multi-million dollar, you know, defense system, and they hold all the cards in the situation, right? So it's not a battle between equals by any means. Obviously, I think that there is wrong being done on both sides, but it feels like there's more wrong being done by Israel. I mean, New York Times had a list of all the kids killed by the recent fighting, and there's like, I forget, it was 60 plus or 70 kids or something. Obviously it's not a good thing, right? I mean, my opinion is that religion is just makes the world situation worse. Obviously the people living there, the politics is the main thing. It's not the religion, obviously, But for people outside, like, for example, British Pakistanis banging down the door of Abu Layth for Muhammad Hijab, for all these people, it is a religious issue. And that's kind of like what you see with ISIS. You see with ISIS that a lot of the fighters are foreign fighters. They're coming from overseas. They're coming from, they're coming from Afghanistan. They're coming from Britain. They're coming from all over the world, right? These people, they want to fight. They want to be involved in these things for the cause of Allah or whatever. But the actual, to the people living there, you know, many of them, it's a political issue. It's not necessarily a religious thing. Obviously, the religion makes it worse. It just makes it, you know, because now you have this special, you know, they want it because the Jews want it, special status to it. Muslims, it's holy to them too. And, you know, obviously, if that didn't get in the way, then things probably would be a little bit more straightforward. But on top of that, you have the religion. It just muddles up the issue even more, right? Let's talk about TikTok. So TikTok obviously is a Chinese company. They don't care about Islam or not talking about Islam, anything like that. As far as I heard, Ali Dawa got banned too. I don't know if he got unbanned or not. But what happened is TikTok, I think all they care about is making money. And most of the content, and this is what happens in all social media, actually, right? People that try to use it for activism tend to get the short end of the stick, because if you're trying to raise awareness on some issue, or even worse, you're attacking religion. So you're doing something that's, you know, that people don't like. People in general don't like to hear about why the religion is bad. And then you have a lot of, you have a lot of people that don't want to hear that. Muslims, for example, they mass flag. The system is not made to withstand large amounts of people complaining or gaming the system, you can say, right? So TikTok, yeah, it almost always revolves around money. That's the problem, right? It's all about money. So TikTok wants to make money from, you know, dancing girls and dancing guys, you know, whatever, like, you know, that's the bread and butter. If the bread and butter is that, and then you have people like me or, you know, Apostate Aladdin or Infidel Noodle coming, it threatens the user base. If you have so many users getting angry, I mean, at the end of the day, they really don't care. They'll just kick you off, right? Unfortunately, on top of it, there is also the fact that a lot of the censors live in Muslim. They're living in Muslim countries, and they're the ones who are making, they're the ones who are making the trouble, right? So if you're Muslim and there's mass flagging going on, let's say on Twitter, and you work in a Muslim country and you're like, you know, whatever, Pakistani or whatever, and you see that this guy is being flagged, what are you going to do, right? You're going to accept the flag and kick him off the platform, right? I mean, I don't know how much of that is actually the case. Obviously, the social media giants will not tell us, what's happening or why it's happening. We don't know what's going on behind closed doors. We don't know how much of it is that. So I don't know. What do you guys think? Should I create another TikTok account? Obviously, like, to me, it feels like it's just declining, you know, diminishing the words, because the more that I create an account, like, I have to put a lot of effort into creating an account and getting, you know, uploading. I do have a copy of all my videos, but I'm not going to re-upload them because they'll just ban me right away, right? So the only thing I can do is I can make a new account and make new videos, right? I don't know what Abdullah Gondal is going to do. We've tried appealing his account as well to see if we can get it back. I don't know if he's going to make a new account or not. I don't think he can. Yeah, TikTok is where the brain cells go to die. That's a good way to put it, right? Anyhow, so it is what it is. So what else do I want to talk about? So Abdullah Gondal banned on Twitter. Abdullah Gondal is going to be more active on YouTube now. So we were talking about what can we do, because he's off on Twitter. So, Cactus Boy. We can talk about Cactus Boy as well. he's going to be spending more time working on, you know, his documentary and working on collabs for YouTube, because to be fair, YouTube is one of the best platforms right now for ex-Muslims. It seems like out of all of the platforms out there, the best one is actually YouTube, because so far, I mean, even Twitter, I've been okay so far, but I mean, I don't know if it's going to continue, right? YouTube so far has, for the most part, managed, other than the fact that I got demonetized on the first channel, for the most part, YouTube's been pretty good. I've been able to say what I want to say and haven't got kicked off for the most part. Gondal should start a channel. Yes, I've talked to him about this. He might actually do one at some point. at the moment, I don't think he's ready to do that. He's still working on some content. P, nice to see you again. Please check PayPal donation. Can't use Super Chat anymore. I didn't get your DM. I'll double check. Thanks for letting me know. It might have got filtered out. I have a few live streams coming up. One of them is with a lady from Indonesia. Just have to figure out how to do it safely, because Malaysia. It's against the law for her to be an apostate. And she said that she actually found out about ex-Muslim. She didn't know anything about ex-Muslim. She wasn't Muslim. She left Islam privately. And she saw Infidel Noodle on TikTok. And because of Infidel Noodle, that was the first time she found out about ex-Muslims. And now she wants to come out. I don't know if it's safe or not. That's the thing. We're trying to figure out, is it safe for her to come out and to do this? Maybe we'll just do audio only. I think that'll be safe enough, because audio, hopefully, you know, people can't really identify you just based on audio, right? As long as there's not too many details are given. Thank you, Flea Somali Minds. Nice to see you on the channel again. Gondal is probably my favorite ex-Muslim because of how eloquent he is at dismantling the falsehoods of Islam. Absolutely. And he has his own unique style that, you know, he's achieved a lot. In many, many, you know, people were turned by Abdullah Gondal, more than in some sense, more than me, right? Because people have the different things they focus on. He's focused a lot on the preservation, the language, and obviously the neuroscience, because that's what he's studying. So that was very that was very helpful. What updates do you have for us? I feel I've been noticing more and more Muslim women not wearing hijab. Do you believe this to be true? Yeah, I do think that things are overall, you know, secularism is getting more and more popular in the Muslim world. I do think that, in my opinion, and this is the same thing I've been saying since the very beginning, people are going to continue either leaving Islam or becoming less religious, right? So it's like Muslims are going to probably still call themselves Muslim, but they'll care less about Islam. I think this is the process we're going to go through. It's going to be a process where people will be more culturally Muslim, but less religiously Muslim. Like I was watching an interview between Reza Aslan and Sank of the Young Turks, and he was saying, you know, I think people will laugh about the idea that we used to believe these things. I do think that's true. There's going to come a point where it's going to become more and more difficult to believe in religion. It's going to be more and more difficult to hang on to faith when you can't, you know, it's going to be more difficult because it's more and more absurd day by day, right? How can you hang on to faith when it's like the whole world, everything in it is showing you how false it is? Like, let's say we start living on Mars. I mean, as unlikely as that is, there's a possibility that'll happen. What are you going to say? What's Islam going to say about praying? Like, do we face the moon or something? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like these things are going to be more and more obscure. Even the Kaaba, facing the Kaaba, the Qibla, it's like, it makes sense on a flat earth, but how does it make sense on a round earth? Because you're facing on a globe, you're facing into space. You're not even facing, it's like the direction you're facing has to curve in order to hit the Kaaba. You know what I'm saying? Things like that, right? Sorry, I didn't understand this question. Do you love around a Muslim society? Do you live around? I'm in Canada. I don't live anywhere near a Muslim society. Just going to the questions here. No, it's not safe. She'll end up having to migrate. Okay. Yeah, we'll figure out something. Maybe we'll do like a voice changer. I think that's what we'll do. What happened to introverted smiles? I wanted to kind of be respectful to intro and not really like diss him about, you know, what happened to him. He went through some, seems like he's going through something, and he, you know, he's went back to Islam. Again, to me, I'm not as much about like personalities as I am about like reasons why people do things, like arguments, let's say, not reasons, like arguments, right? I didn't see any like arguments from him why he believes Islam is suddenly true again. I didn't see any sort of So I do have some theories on why he became Muslim. And you know, before he shut down his YouTube channel, he actually made a video where he talked about I'll read that super chat in a minute. He made a video where he talked about, you know, the challenge of atheist men in being in a relationship, finding a woman, finding a partner, versus Muslim men. He said, you know, atheist women have to compete, you know, it's a dog eat dog world, survival of the fittest. You know, if you go to some atheist conference, you know, the atheist woman would be like, oh, you're not that attractive, or you're not that fit, you know, I'll go for someone else. Whereas a Muslim woman would be like, you know, I'm going to marry you for taqwa, I'm going to marry you for piety. So I think, you know, something along the lines of that, probably something within his life needs to be fixed. And maybe he thinks coming back to Islam will fix that issue. I don't have anything else to say about that. I do think it's his own personal choice that he wants to be Muslim or not. I don't like the way he just flailed publicly and, you know, went down in fire. You know what I mean? Like, just like attacking everybody on the way out. You know what I mean? It's just like there's no need to go out with a bang like that. It was just ridiculous. Like, he deleted his channel and like attacked everybody, attacked every single ex-Muslim, especially ex-Muslim women. It was just like, it was disgusting. It was like honestly disgusting. And there's no excuse for what he did and how he was is behaving. Faye, the most gracious, has left the ex-Muslim community calling it fake. So, you know, Faye has her issues as well. And I tried to engage with her about her problems with the ex-Muslim community. She's obviously ex-Muslim. She's not Muslim. She doesn't believe in Islam, but she has issues with the community. And that's fine. I don't know if Intro is Muslim or if he's just like deist or theist or what he is. He's like pro-Islam again or something. I don't know, man. Faye, the most gracious, left. Oh, yeah. So Faye... Again, Faye has her own issues. I don't want to talk about her. She's still pissed off at me for saying that. Honestly, I'm not going to repeat what I've already repeated in my video on Zara. Whatever the case is, I don't want to talk about Faye. Like, you know what? I just want to move on from that. You know what? I think she needs to move on as well. And so I'm not going to talk about her. I hope she finds peace and happiness and all that in her life. Seems like she has a lot of issues, and I do hope, you know, she finds comfort. And obviously this whole thing that happened with Zara K and then with Yasmin Muhammad, and it's not helping her. And it's just, anyways, you know, whatever happened, I do wish that she, wish her well. I did stop funding her. I told her nicely that it's not about your content. I mean, that was a lie. I felt that she was being a little bit too, I don't know. Like I said, I tried to engage with her about her content, but it didn't seem like she was interested, right? Like, you know, the ex-Muslim community needs to like, you know, do more diligence about certain organizations like Faithless Hijabi and this and that. And I said, well, Faithless Hijabi is Faithless Hijabi. It's not like approved by the ex-Muslim community or anything. It's just one organization. It's a small outfit run by a few people. And if they did something wrong, then obviously there's a court system for you to, you know, or, you know, if something you abuse in some sort of contract or something like that, like it is what it is. Like, it's not really the ex-Muslim community issue. If it was like the ex-Muslims of North America, that's kind of like an official organization. It is an official organization, and I'm a part of it. And then I would speak on behalf of them. If ex-Muslims of North America did something wrong, then I would either have to condemn them, or I'd have to, you know, ask them to make an apology or whatever. It's just, you know, so anyways, like I said, she has issues, but it just kept going on and on. Every single video was negativity about this person and that person. And it didn't feel like this content was helping anything, right? And maybe that's just her way of dealing with it, her what she's upset about, and that's fine. She can do that. I didn't feel like I wanted to be part of that anymore, you know? And yeah, so that's enough I have. That's all I have to say. What would I say to Hijab if I ever saw him? I don't know. I try to have a friendly conversation with him. You know, a lot of times when you're on social media, it's like one thing, you act really dramatic. In real life, I hope it would be like a proper conversation. Like, we'd be able to, you know, I'd love to sit down with him and just have like a podcast style conversation/interview. I do think a lot of the things he's saying are over the top. I do think he has his issues. I don't know. I think he has his issues, which is causing him to, if anyone's seen Hijab, like, he's had a lot of meltdowns. He's apologized publicly for these meltdowns. He's getting in a lot of trouble on social media repeatedly. And then he says things like, okay, I'm just going to stay off social media. He attacked this like Muslim scholar for saying, he was saying to some Muslim on Twitter something about sucking her wife's breasts or something. So there's an opinion, there's an Islamic opinion that you can become mahram to a woman by drinking her milk, even if she's an adult. So he was making fun of that opinion, and he was arguing with some sheikh or something. I don't even remember the details now, but and then of course people got mad at him because he was being like very like crude about it, just like he was being crude with me and my wife and Abdullah Gondal and his wife. And he was saying all these like, oh, what if your wife did this and that? Like, he was being very crude and vulgar. So he was doing the same thing with the Muslim community. And I was just like, well done. Like, you guys are getting a taste of your own medicine. You guys are getting a taste of Hijab now. But of course, he had to apologize and back down and, and, you know, say he was going to stay off social media. And then, of course, you know, after he made the video on Abu Layth, this, you know, he was, thankfully, nobody was hurt in Abu Layth's situation. Nobody, like, you know, they scared the hell out of him and his family, but nobody, like, I think nobody physically like hurt him, right? I didn't hear about any physical like altercation that happened. So thankfully, whatever happened, hopefully that's the end of it, right? Muhammad Hijab is married. Weber is saying a magnificent G-man. Okay, social media censorship is awful. It is what it is. I try to work within the platforms that I have because, you know, what else do we do, right? This is the platforms that we have, and this is either use it or lose it. That's what I think, right? You and Gondal were spreading Islamophobia. Unlike people like Muhammad Hijab, who spreads peace on social media. Like Muhammad Hijab was saying, you know, we welcome death. We're not scared of death. And we'll kill your dogs if your dogs come near us and this and that, right? Spreading peace. This is a lovely comment. I should pin this comment if I can find it. Hold on. Yeah, found it. What? I can't. Wonderful comment, Skeptic Muhammad. Nice to see you on here. Give me a second. I want to pin this comment. It's done. There we go. Was Muhammad mentioned in the Quran? Muhammad is mentioned at least once by name, right? Surah Muhammad. if you want to discuss like things of this nature, you know, when we're getting into like, yeah, he's barely mentioned. I mean, that's one thing that people, let's say Christians, like to argue sometimes, that Muhammad is mentioned less than Jesus in the Quran. It's a tricky topic to get into if you want to get into the historical Muhammad. Historical Muhammad is not an easy topic to get into because it requires a much more deep understanding of the sources, of the texts, of the historical methods, and you know, all of that stuff. I normally, when I'm discussing Muhammad, I'm discussing Muhammad as he's discussed according to Sunni Islam, meaning according to Bukhari and Muslim. I'm discussing the Muhammad that I believed in, not what Muhammad, you know, really was. Because I don't think we can easily know that, right? You know what I mean? I don't think we can easily know who Muhammad really was. What we have is a construction that was created by the scholars, the Muslim scholars, Sunnis and Shias, both created their own Muhammad, right? And he's a little bit different. Both those Muhammads are different. And neither of them is historical. Both of them are creations. And even when you read, you know, there's a good book on this by Sean Anthony about Muhammad. And he talks about how even like Ibn Ishaq, they wanted to show him less as a merchant and more as a shepherd. So Bukhari says he's a shepherd, right? But if you go to earlier sources, he was described as a merchant. They don't want him to be a merchant because it conflicts with him being this unlettered guy that never heard anything and didn't know anything, and he's coming up with all these stories, right? So they want to construct him as not a merchant. They want to downplay the merchant and they want to upplay the shepherd. Oh, he's just a shepherd that, you know, was taking care of sheep. Well, what is he? Doesn't know anything. Well, yet he came up with this big book full of stories, right? Which supposedly that's enough to be a prophet nowadays. Come up with a book of stories that people are familiar with. Looking at the test, looking at the test that the supposedly the Jews gave him, or they said, you know, tell us about Dhulqarnain, right? The non-Muslims came up with this challenge. Tell us about Dhulqarnain. And if you think about it, they're asking him about something that they know. So this is a story that was being spread, or you know, like, I don't want to say it's common. It was common knowledge, but there was a legend of what I believe it was Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great, the legend, he was Dhulqarnain, the man Dhulqarnain, the one that had two horns, right? So the Dhulqarnain story was a myth that people knew about. For some reason, Muhammad, who was a storyteller, didn't know about it. Why didn't Muhammad know about this story if he's a storyteller? Like, he's a guy that's coming up with all these stories about Jesus and Mary and Moses. And shouldn't he know about Dhulqarnain? Dhulqarnain is another famous character, right? And so what you see here is these, like, look at the test itself. The test itself is, there's a story we know. Do you know the story too? It's not like that's not even a valid test. Like, you're not even testing anything that can prove whether he's truly a prophet or not. The people at that time, maybe they wanted to expose him. Whoever came up with this was a genius, because it actually exposed the entire thing as a sham. First of all, for I believe it was over 10 days, he didn't come up with the answer, right? The excuse was Dhulqarnain. Oh, sorry, the excuse was he didn't say inshallah. That's the cover up, right? He forgot to say inshallah, so Allah left him without the story. In reality, he was probably trying to come up with the details for the story so he could tell it back to them. The funny thing is, he could have just said, like, this is just a made-up story. But like, as Hulkster is saying, Alexander the Great was an important figure for Jewish people. He was the noble pagan that helped Jews. So according to the Alexander romance, the Jewish version, I believe the Ethiopian one was the one where he was a Christian. Each community had a different version of Alexander the Great. And in many versions, he was a monotheist. He wasn't a pagan at all, which is another contradiction with, you know, what the real Alexander the Great was. But in the myths, you know, they changed the story, right? And they made him into a monotheist. So Muhammad, you know, obviously thought this was a real story that he needs to know about. It's so funny. It's such a joke. Like, instead of just saying, nope, this is false. No, he's like, yep, Allah told me the story. Here's the story. And in the story, you know, obviously he makes a lot of blunders, like he's going to the edge of the earth, the two edges, and the sun is setting into a murky pool, and he's seeing the place where the people have no shade from the sun, and this and that. This story originated, so we can look at the Syriac romance and we can say this is where the story came from, but more likely, like a better explanation is both the Syriac romance and the Quran are pulling this from Jewish myths. So when I actually did a little bit more reading on this, I realized that the story even maybe predates the Alexander romance. And it actually, again, back to Jewish folktales. It's funny how all of the stories in the Quran always go back to Jewish folktales, doesn't it? Isn't that interesting, right? So the problem with this argument, get off Facebook, Twitter, WhatsApp, and use BitChute, is that BitChute doesn't have many users. It's the same thing with eBay. Let's say you want to start your own eBay. Unless you have a niche that's very specific, nobody's going to use it because everybody, all the sellers are on eBay. So why would customers come? And then customers won't come because there's no sellers. So it's a chicken and egg problem, right? The chicken and egg problem is the same thing that happens on all of these platforms. And then, as you know, it's even worse than that because was it BitChute or one of those Gab mines? One of them was pulled because Amazon pulled the services after that attack on the Capitol. So, you know, it's like, it's not an easy problem to solve at all, which is why I'm trying to use the platforms that I have to the best of my ability, right? Do you concede making some mistakes in your past videos? So, yeah, I mean, Farid made one video. So when I talked about Alexander the Great, this is a problem with Farid in general. I made a video on Dhulqarnain, and I mentioned a bunch of things. And one of the things I mentioned in the video, which was probably the weakest point of all, had to do with Dhulqarnain referred to as Alexander by some Muslim scholars. And it was a weak point. Farid responded to that one point in his video. So I actually cut out that clip and I mentioned publicly that, okay, this is a weak point. That's not even the point. Like, that wasn't even the point of my video. Okay, so let's say it wasn't valid that those Muslim scholars thought that Dhulqarnain was Alexander the Great. That doesn't even matter. There's so much evidence. There's too many similarities between Alexander the Great, especially the Syriac version, and Dhulqarnain. There's just too many. Even the name Dhulqarnain, even the coins, the existence of the coins with the man with two horns. Alexander was known as the man with two horns. Like, there's like a million arguments, and yet he picked on that one thing, and it's like, okay, you're debunked. Well, no, not really. What about the rest of the video, right? That's the same thing he does with the when Abdul Gondal did a presentation on the Muhammad being having the temporal lobe epilepsy and all of those issues. Farid brought his cousin, who was some sort of scientist or something, and they like nitpicked the points, and they don't go for the strongest points. They go for the weakest points, right? So that's the issue. But yeah, I'm okay with mentioning that I've made mistakes. In no way do the mistakes I made make Islam true. Like, if you go back to the basics, even if let's say every single argument I made on Islam is false. Meaning, let's say that I pointed out five mistakes in the Quran. Dhulqarnain, scientific errors, the stories being made up, a copy. Let's say all of those are false. Now we have a book. There's a book. Muhammad came up with this book, you know. I didn't find a mistake in it. Does that mean it's from God? If I wrote a book myself today, right? I wrote a book. I gave you the book. Let's say there's no mistakes in the book. Let's say I'm a new prophet. I claim to be the next prophet after Muhammad. And I come up with I come up with the book of Samir, right? The book of Samir builds on the Bible and builds on the Quran, and it has some more stuff on it, right? Even if there's no mistakes in that book, am I truly speaking to God? Can you make that argument? No, it's a non sequitur. You need to prove as a Muslim that the actual book is from God. And how do you do that? How do you prove the Quran is from God, right? It's the burden of proof. The burden of proof is so important, right? Because it shifts the focus back on the one making the claim. If someone's making a claim, I spoke to God yesterday, my book is from God. Okay, fine. Can you prove it? Yeah, my book is a miracle because you can't write anything like it. Well, I can't write anything exactly like it because you and I are different people and everyone speaks a little bit differently. I could use some of the words. If I use some of the words that you use, then people will say, well, I use your words. So that's not like it either. So how do you, it's a great question. How can you prove that a book is from God? Well, I can't say for sure, but I can give some points. One point is, for sure, it wouldn't have mistakes in it. It wouldn't have mistakes that like a 12-year-old would, would not make today. A 12-year-old in 2021 would not make these mistakes that Muhammad made in the book. There's also lack of information. There's lack of external confirmation in the book itself. There's nothing inside the book that Muhammad couldn't have known. There's no mention of, for example, the female egg, which, like, for example, we discovered the female egg, we discovered evolution. When I say female egg, I mean like a human female egg, that like a woman has an egg that comes every month. You know, the Quran talks all about, blood and menzies being unpure, blah, blah, blah. But not once does it mention, well, what's the point of menzies? What's the point of menstruation? Why is it a menstrual cycle? Okay, well, the Quran's not meant to prove or to teach science. Fair enough. The Quran's not meant to prove or teach science. But it does mention a lot of other things like that. It talks about the embryo and this and that. So why, and it talks about the purpose of the stars is for travelers to find their way. It does talk about purposes of things. It doesn't talk about the purpose of that, right? So if that's your argument, then I'd like to see, well, why is there nothing in the Quran that Muhammad couldn't have known? The embryology was basically, Galenic embryology, clot of blood. We don't say clot of blood anymore. That's like 7th century Greek embryology. Like, that's just very outdated. And talk to any embryologist. Talk to anyone who studies science. The Quran is just, and even Muslims will say that, well, the Quran's not trying to be scientific. I agree. I'm not saying it's trying to be scientific. But even if it was, it would be wrong. And why would it be wrong? Because Muhammad didn't know better. If the supreme creator of the universe wrote this book, he did a really shitty job. Like a 12-year-old today wouldn't make the mistakes and would have more information that would be impressive than the creator of the universe. So going back to Farid and mistakes and all that, you could prove me wrong on every single thing I said, but that still wouldn't prove the Quran to be right. To prove the Quran to be right, you need a lot more than that. You need some sort of confirmation. So what else could the Quran have? How else could the Quran prove itself? How about if something happened that nobody could explain? How about if the Quran, I mean, it's going to sound kind of dumb, but what if the Quran was in Chinese? Sure, the Arabic people at that time wouldn't be able to confirm it, but like within a couple hundred years, it would have gone to China, and maybe even less than that, because if they had a book in Chinese, I mean, there's so many things that would have been harder to explain than, and would have required, would have been more puzzling than, Muhammad coming up with a book of stories that were like spreading in the area that he lived in. That's not even impressive. Maybe the Quran being in multiple languages, maybe, this number 19 miracle that the submitter sect, Rashid Khalifa, claimed to be true. Maybe if that was true, that there was like a checksum, a mathematical checksum on the Quran, but of course not. The Quran itself was preserved on like bones, right? On the bones of sheep and leather skins and people forgot some of it and stuff like that. How is this impressive? There is zero reason why anyone would believe this is the word of God if they were evaluating it critically without being, you know, brainwashed as a child. So why do non-Muslims become Muslim? Well, for one thing, I do think that they're given a lot of misleading information. I don't think this is great. Table of Elements, without people knowing what all meant, would have been such more impressive. Table of Elements is one example. There's like a million things the Quran could have had that would have been convincing, right? This is not convincing. Like, there's nothing convincing about the Quran, right? Please stop repeating David Wood's nonsense. Does David Wood say that? Because the same thing would apply to the Bible. So why would David Wood say that? I don't think David Wood would say that. I don't think David Wood would say any of this, because in my opinion, the same issue with child marriage. Will you make videos about Islamic prophecies that were fulfilled? I actually do have something that I can share with you about that. It's called Muhammad's False Prophecies. All right, so Muhammad's 10 False Prophecies. David Wood says David Wood is missing. Yeah, so just watch a video on Quran preservation that Abdullah Gondal, watch his presentation. Look at the Sana manuscript. Look at how it was erased, and using UV light, you know, scientists, historians, or whatever, they're able to see the writing that was below it. A palimpsest is not something that any random person can afford. This was like probably most likely, according to academics of the time, this was a companion codex. This was a copy of a companion of Muhammad. This shows that the Quran went through edits, went through revisions. And to make it worse, Uthman burned all the competing copies, or at least he tried to. Yet in some of the hadith, we actually have narrations of missing verses. Why do you say David Wood says that? It's in the hadith. It's there in the Muslims, in the Sunni sources, that there's verses missing. Aisha herself said that. Why do you need David Wood to tell you that? Your own book tells you that. Look at any academic paper, honestly. Even Muslims, for example, let me just look at my books here. I'll give you an example of one book. David, hold on. Okay, so Dutton. Where's Dutton? If I can share this, it'd be nice. Life of Muhammad, Origins of the Quran. Oh, here we go. Found it. What I was looking for. Dutton, 2011. So, orality, literacy, and the 7 Ahruf Hadith. Even Muslim academics, like, for example, Yasin Dutton, admit that the 10 Ahruf, there's big issues with the 10 Ahruf. There's competing Qurans. There's, you know, narrations talking about missing verses. You know? Stop using Chinese spyware, talking about TikTok. Yeah, like TikTok, you know, I don't know if it's really spyware, because the operating system, meaning, you know, Android or iOS, is supposed to protect you from them spying on you. They have access to whatever you give them access to, so your photos and your stuff like that. I think more than being spyware, it's more a money-making machine for them. It's a money-printing machine, really. Anyhow, Detective O. Will wants to argue there's no 10 Ahrufs. Anyhow, I don't want to get into that. I think you should just look at your own sources yourself. In terms of the false prophecies, or the prophecies of Muhammad, let's talk about the prophecies of Muhammad. Aisha Hadith is weak. Okay, so I just want to bring it up. Okay, it's not just the Aisha Hadith. Again, I really think you should look up this paper. Let me just post a link to this paper. Do a little bit of studying You know, this is the reason why. This is the reason why when people study Islam academically, they don't remain Muslim like Sunni Muslims want them to be Muslim. They change their opinions, and Yasir Qadhi is probably the best example of this. You cannot remain a faithful believer in dogma of Islam after you go to academia. Your faith will not remain. It's impossible. Because what happens is, as Yasir Qadhi has said, and as Noman Ali Khan has said, these academics, unlike when you go to Medina or Azhar, the academics at Yale and Harvard, they will take apart the building blocks that you were taught is what builds Islam, and will put it back together in such a way that you won't be able to believe it anymore, because there's so many problems with the story. There's so many problems with Quran preservation. I mean, Yasir Qadhi just basically sped up the demise of the Quran. It's not like this is a secret. I mean, he misjudged the Muslim reaction, I think. He underestimated how badly Muslims will take it. Because look, Yasir Qadhi has these academic glasses on. He's engaging with people like Yasin Dutton and academics, people that are actually, you know, looking at the real sources and seeing how bad the preservation is. And he knows how bad it is. And he knows that in academia, this is what people are saying. He just misjudged that how the public would take it if he said this. I mean, he should have known better. But this was like, you know, as they say, the qadr of Allah. It was a ball that's been rolling and getting bigger and bigger. And it was inevitable that this was going to like pop off at some point, right? This is going to explode. The whole thing started with, you know, the fact that he had problems with, you know, the narrative. He privately told some people. These people decided to expose him, Dawah Man and, you know, the rest of the crew. Fareed Leaks, of course. We have to thank Fareed Leaks for exposing Yasir Qadhi. And of course, this thing has been kind of bubbling under the covers for a long time, that people wanted to know what's going on with the preservation of the Quran. Why did Yasir Qadhi say in this private email list that there's problems? But Yasir Qadhi is just quoting what, you know, Abu Dawood and others are saying in the books, right? And I'm not an expert on this, but there's Abdul Gondal knows this topic much better, that Muslim scholars have written about these things, right? And even Yasir Qadhi said that in the email, that just look up, you know, Kitab al-Masahif, right? Kitab Masahif, for example, by Ibn Abu Dawood. It mentions some of the issues in the Muslim. This is a Muslim book, not a non-Muslim book. And then, of course, all the academics are talking about these things openly, right? Like, so it's not, it's, the thing has been bubbling under the surface for a long time. It's yeah, okay, forget the hadith on Aisha, man. Forget the hadith on Aisha. It doesn't even matter. All that matters is that your own scholars know about the problems in Islam and the Quran, and you should listen to them. You don't need to listen to me. And of course, Yasir Qadhi has been thrown under the bus by Muhammad Hijab, by just about everybody now, because they didn't like what he's saying. They didn't like that he's being open and honest about it. So anyhow, enough about that. I don't really want to go on and on about that anymore, because Mr. Expert Detective O. Will, with the shady hat and the no real name, is a big expert on the Ahruf situation. Okay. An ex-Muslim's Quran would be great, like the atheist Bible. Yeah, it'd be fun to write, you know, a skeptic's annotated Quran or something like that, right? Anyhow. Just call everyone Eleontalist. Yeah, exactly. Like I said, anyways, even if the Quran preservation, I think, is just a cherry on top of all the problems in the Quran. if the Quran's not preserved, it's like checkmate Muslims. But even if it is, there's like a million other issues. Even if the Quran doesn't have mistakes in it, you got to admit Muhammad did a lot of immoral things. Marrying a 6-year-old, sleeping with her at 9, you know, Banu Qurayza assassinating Ka'b ibn Ashraf. There's so many things he did, some of which are not kosher for YouTube, so I'm not even gonna risk mentioning them. That's the world we live in. I can't even say what Muhammad did on social media, or I will get in trouble. You know what I'm saying? What are the immoral things he did? I just mentioned a bunch of them. Taking away the rights of all adopted children just because he wanted to sleep with Zainab. How about that? How about the fact that before Islam, adopted children had better rights? Even Muhammad adopted a child, Zayd ibn Muhammad. Even Muhammad himself was calling Zayd his son, like a real son. I mean, imagine you're an adopted kid, right? And then suddenly it's because your dad was your adopted dad, wants to marry your wife. Suddenly he says, you're not my son anymore. You're actually the son, you're actually Zayd ibn Harith. You're no longer Zayd ibn Muhammad because I want to sleep with your wife. That's weird. The Arabs, the pre-Islamic Arabs, had a bigger issue with that than they had with Aisha, because at that time, child marriage was not an issue. As we've matured in morality, we know this is an issue, we know it's problematic, and we don't like child marriage for very good reasons, for health reasons, and for, you know, children should be children, not baby machines, right? Like, so it's a joke that you're asking me what immoral things did Muhammad do, right? Like, why assassinating people that insult you is wrong? Why is it wrong to kill people that insult you? Why is it wrong? Why do you think it's wrong to kill people, Einstein? It's wrong to kill people. Like, if someone insults you, insult them back. You don't kill them. Oh my God. Let's leave this pivot. technically, there's nothing wrong with Muhammad marrying Zainab. The problem, well, other than the fact that she's his cousin, and he created a big problem that exists. Muslims are suffering now because Muhammad allowed cousin marriage. Do you not see the problem in that? Repeated cousin marriage leads to all sorts of health problems. The Quran does not advise against cousin marriage. The Hadith does not advise against cousin marriage. In fact, Muhammad married his cousin. So the bigger problem with the whole Zainab thing is what I told you, that he took away the rights of adopted children just so he could be with Zainab. I mean, if this one thing doesn't expose the world religion as a man-made cult, I don't know what will convince you. Muhammad took away adoption so he could marry Zainab. Do you not see how crazy that is? The Quran says, we wanted you to marry Zainab so Muslim men would understand that they can marry the adopted son's ex-wife when the adopted sons have no more need for the ex-wives. Use your brain. This is the most craziest thing ever. This is the most insane thing ever in Islam, that Allah wanted Muslim men to know that they can marry the adopted son's ex-wife so Muhammad could marry his adopted son's ex-wife. Does this make sense? If you can't see that this is man-made cult, I cannot help you if this one thing does not prove it to you. There is zero reason why Muslims would want to marry the adopted kids' wives, ex-wives. That never happens. That never ever happened in 1400 years. Yet the Quran actually goes out of its way to mention this. This is it. This is it. There's no adoption. Exactly. There's no adoption. There's no adoption in Islam. So why does the Quran talk about marrying your adopted son's ex-wife? You just checkmated yourself, buddy. The Quran abolished adoption, and at the same time, it says you can marry your adopted son's ex-wife. Done. Islam is done right now. Islam is done. Like, I don't need Quran preservation. I don't need mistakes in the Quran. I can just use this one example. This one example is enough for anyone to know. This one example is enough for anyone to know that Islam is a man-made religion made up by Muhammad. And I think I will end it at that. It's been an hour. Yeah, there's so many other examples too. Even Muhammad allowing his warriors to sleep with slaves. Why didn't he require them to marry the slaves? If freeing slaves is so good, why don't you have to free a slave and marry her before sleeping with her in Islam? You cannot tell me that no Muslim can argue this is a good thing. I've already proved the Quran wrong just by showing you one improvement. The Quran is supposed to be the perfect manual of how to live your life. All I need to do is make one improvement to the Quran and you can see it's not from God. A few days ago, you can see on ex-Muslims in North America Twitter account, they showed footage of the massive dawah, Bilal Phillips condoning the murder. Oh, that's interesting. You can argue it's a good thing. I don't know how you would argue it's a good thing to do this, to basically allow slavery and to allow men to sleep with their slaves. I can't ever argue. If you want to argue it's a good thing, good luck, because you'd have the rest of humanity against you. You'd have the rest of people with decent values against you. The only people that would argue that slavery and sleeping with slaves is a good thing would be people who take advantage of innocent women that are captured in vulnerable situations like that. Nobody can argue this is a good thing. Nobody can argue, right? Islam is glowing. You cannot beat God. Okay, whatever. I don't even care. This is exactly it. Religion can make good men do bad things. Yeah, so, you know, Muhammad is just exactly what he seems to be. He's a man from the 7th century that had brain issues. And he, I think he had some issues with his mind. I think, you know, Gondal has come up with a lot of evidence that his mom had a bad childbirth, you know, and probably during childbirth there was some issues happened to him. Muhammad, and even the fact that, you know, there are people that up to a certain age, they don't have any issues until the 40s, for example, just like Muhammad. We don't know. Maybe he did have issues. I mean, he did faint unconscious multiple times, according to his own narrations. So I'm convinced that Muhammad was just a guy with brain issues that was a good leader and accomplished a lot of things, kind of like Genghis Khan did. He managed to kill and slaughter and grow his empire. He managed to come up with a religion that teaches people to die, teaches people to self-sacrifice. Like Muhammad Hijab said, we're not scared of death. We want to die. I mean, what better ideology would grow? What more can you ask from your followers than to willingly kill themselves for you? Like, how much more successful can you be than to convince people to die for you? That you're the man of God and they will get all these beautiful virgin girls in paradise and blah, 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 right? That's like a masterpiece of brainwashing. That is genius level brainwashing. And I don't think he was like genius in the sense that he was a genius. I think that there were some things going on in his brain. And I think he lived in a time and place where he was able to get away with it. But he was able to accomplish these things, because in today's world, nobody would be taken. I mean, actually, when you watch documentaries on cults, you'll see that people today do get, especially a certain type of population, people that are like low self-esteem and stuff, they do fall into cults. But you'll never have a cult growing like Islam grew, right? It's just not going to happen anymore. It can't happen, because at that time, there was fertile ground for superstition and ignorance and jinns and black magic, you know, and evil eye, and I'm going to protect you from evil eye, and, you know, Gog and Magog's going to come and get you guys, and, you know, you can scare people like that. But in today's world, you don't get away with it. You will not get away with it, and your religion will be cut short. Now we have to deal with people that are having big families, that are, you know, having lots of kids, and then the teaching the kids Islam. I had lots of kids too, and I untaught them Islam. But Muslims have big families, and so we need to help, you know, keep fighting this good fight, because the numbers game is against us, right, for sure, and we need to counter that however we can. So, you know, to everyone that's here, keep up the good fight. You know, this is an important issue, and it's an important battle. It's a battle for the hearts and minds. You know, we're fighting for secularism, we're fighting for religious freedom. We're not just fighting for atheism, we're fighting for religious freedom. At least I am. I'm fighting for the rights of Ahmadi Muslims, for Shia Muslims, for Ismaili Muslims. Yeah, for Sunni Muslims too, even Sunni Muslims. As long as their rights don't trample on my rights, on our rights as a species, as humanity. We want fair rights for everybody. You don't get special treatment just because you have a religious belief. You don't get to trample on anyone else's rights just because it's your religion. No. That's why we have secularism. That's why we have democracy. That's why we have... that's why we're fighting. That's why I'm fighting for these things. I don't take for granted what I have, because I was one of those brainwashed people that, sad to say, I mean, go to my website. Go to lightuponlight.com. Scroll down to the bottom and look up the articles like, the battlefield is the safest place on earth. Look up the articles like me praising this Chechen jihadi. What's his name? Al-Khattab. I posted those articles. I was a fan of Anwar Avlaki. I was one of those who, there was cognitive dissonance. I lived in the West. I cared for non-Muslims. I didn't hate non-Muslims. I wanted them all to become Muslim. But at the same time, I also believed in Islam. I believed in jihad. I believed in all of these things. And who knows, I could have ended up in a situation where I would have gone for jihad. I don't know. It could have possibly happened. Like who knows, you know? Excuse me. I don't know exactly, you know, how many people are out there that were like me that could have gone off the deep end. You know, could have gone for jihad, could have sacrificed their life. And even if they don't go that to that extreme, maybe they don't go for jihad. Maybe they just do something less, but still something bad. For example, they don't get a mortgage. They have kids, they have a wife, but they don't get a mortgage. So they're renting the rest of their life, and for no good reason, just for dogma, right? They'll never own a home if they die. And I've seen at the mosque at my university where I was studying in Waterloo, Ontario, there was a Somali family begging for money outside the mosque because the house burned down. They didn't have insurance on the house. Why didn't they have insurance? You know how cheap the insurance, you know how much I pay for insurance on my house? I think it's like 80 bucks a month. I think it's like, is it 80 bucks? I don't even know if it's 80 bucks. Maybe it's like 60. If my house burns down, I'll get a new house for 60 bucks a month. Like, you got to be a complete buffoon not to get insurance. Except these people are not buffoons. They're brainwashed by Islam, which teaches them, and these sheikhs that tell them insurance is haram. We had people, I've met people, I've been to people's houses from Hizb ut-Tahrir, that told me things like, I don't have car insurance, which is illegal. It's against the law to not have car insurance. And I drive a car. And I got stopped by the police once. They asked me for insurance. I didn't have it. Then I quickly signed up. So I don't know what happened to it being haram. Suddenly they quickly signed up, which is funny. But like, Muslims' lives are more screwed up because of Islam. Islam doesn't help Muslims. This is why I fight this fight. This is why I believe in this. It's just like, I don't want anyone else to give up something that they don't have to give up for no good reason. I don't want anyone to miss out on the one and only life that they have. And if there's a next life, maybe there's a next life, but definitely not Islam. Islamic hereafter, there's no virgins and couches of gold and rivers of honey and milk. Like, I don't even know who wants that. And non-alcoholic wine and whatever other nonsense is mentioned in the Quran, which is basically, you know, invented for horny men that you want to fight in your battles, right? Basically, you want these men to fight in your battles, so you make it difficult for them, and then you give them all these benefits, right? Sexual benefits in the next life, sexual benefits in this life. This battle is worth fighting, and we need to fight it. However you do it, you know, whether it's supporting ex-Muslims in North America, supporting secularism, supporting, Faisal, what's his name? Ideas Without Borders, which is translating books into Arabic, all of these books on science, you know, supporting. So I should go on Hamza's Den. I actually have a video where I tried to go on Hamza's Den. I didn't even know about Hamza's Den. Some Muslim DM'd me on Twitter, told me to go on Hamza's Den. And so I went, and they wouldn't let me on the show. Nope. It was so funny. It was so funny. I put a super chat saying, you guys don't want to let me on the show. I thought this is like Hamza's Den, right? And by mistake, Hamza, or whoever I guess his name is Hamza, the owner of the channel highlighted my super chat by mistake, which is so funny, which basically said, why are you not letting me on? Because normally they try not to acknowledge me. They try not to acknowledge my existence by like pretending I'm not there. Oh my God. It's pretty funny. If you're going by a Quranist perspective on things, Ishaq Ibrahim, I have a strong feeling that you are a Quranist. Can you just let me know if that's correct? Is that true that you are a Quranist? If you are a Quranist, then I don't have anything to say to you, because your Islam is going to be very different than the Islam that I'm talking about. I have no issue with the Quran if the Quran doesn't call adoption. If there's no problem with adoption, then great. Quran still allows men to sleep with the slaves. The Quran still allows men to beat their wives. I'm sure you're going to tell me doesn't mean beat. The Quran still has the most ass backwards idiotic talaq rule, which makes no sense, which is so stupid that when you look at the story of how it originated, the Genesis story of the talaq rule, and you see that the Muslim men were complaining and how Muhammad tried to fix it by making it like the rule is so dumb. And it's too easy. So he makes, instead of fixing the rule, he makes another rule that makes it worse, which is if you do that, then you have to sleep with, your wife has to sleep with another man. So honestly, Faisal Said Al-Mutta, thank you. I think it's called Ideas Without Borders. Ideas Without Borders. Ideas Beyond Borders. Yeah, that's the one. So I support Ideas Beyond Borders, whether you support, you know, ex-Muslims of North America, whether you support my channel, whatever you do, however you do it, you know, thank you. You know, I do appreciate it. And I do think that this is a battle worth fighting. It's been a month. I've been a little bit busy with Bitcoin. I'm trying to learn how to trade and to make some money on that. So that's what I have been busy with. I was doing research on staking and mining and all of that stuff. You know, I was big into crypto back in 2017, and then I just left it alone when everything went down, and I held on to whatever I had. I sold my Bitcoin, I kept my Ethereum, and now when things started going up again, I got excited again and started to look into it more. At the moment, the market is kind of going sideways, which is maybe a good opportunity to buy now, because when it goes up, it's gonna go up like crazy. So if you have some money, my recommendation, money that you don't mind losing, let's just put it like that. If you have money that you don't mind losing, you're looking for an investment, maybe buy a little bit of Ethereum, buy a little bit of Bitcoin, and maybe some of the other coins out there you can look into, you know, here and there. that's my take. Take it or leave it. Just, you might lose it all. I personally don't think so, because there's a lot of really positive news coming out day after day. Most of the negative news is coming from China. And so the market is a little bit unsettled right now, but this is what I've been busy with. So I do think that at some point it's going to explode like never before. Bitcoin at some point will hit 100,000. It's already proved 60,000, 65,000. Now it's like in its 30s. So it's a much better entry point now than at 60, because it's half off, right? Does that mean it's not going to go to 20s? It might go to 20s. It might go to 15s. Who knows? That's why I'm saying don't risk what you can't lose. This is not financial advice. Everyone has to say that because obviously I have Bitcoin, so I want people to buy it. But obviously it's the market cap is, it hit $1 trillion. Bitcoin hit $1 trillion all by itself. So no matter what I say, it's not going to make a difference. Like I'm not going to be able to push up the price in any way, right? But yeah, exactly. This is not financial advice. I do think I'm a fan of BNB as well. Am I trying to invest all that Mossad money into Bitcoin? Yeah, exactly. Doge is, I don't like Doge because it's very, very volatile. It's like top of the volatility charts. It goes, Elon Musk pumps it, he tweets about it, it goes up like crazy, then it goes down like crazy. It's very risky. If you want to buy it and hold it as like an extremely speculative, like if you think Bitcoin is risky, this thing is even more risky than Bitcoin because it goes up and down like way more. It went up from 18 cents to 60 cents, back down to 30 cents, up to a dollar almost, not even, didn't hit a dollar though. Maybe it'll go to a dollar. I wouldn't touch Doge, however you say it. I wouldn't touch it. I think it's too much hype, too much manipulation, too many big wallets. There's people that own 25% of the supply of Dogecoin. Like they can tank the whole coin in like seconds. They can just crash the market if they want to cash out. I mean, they wouldn't necessarily do that, but there's too many risk factors. That's why I wouldn't buy it. I would buy something like that has a little bit more actual use case, actual more value, like reserve rights. Maybe it's a, you know, another bet you can make, small bet. Binance coin is another coin that was over, almost hit $700. It's like 300 right now. Again, Ethereum is you cannot lose on Ethereum, in my opinion. Bitcoin, I still think is a good bet. I don't know if Ethereum is going to outdo Bitcoin at some point. You know, some people think it will. There's been a lot of really positive news about Ethereum. At the end of the day, I don't know anything. Nobody knows anything. Everything might go to zero. I don't think so, but it might. So don't gamble any money that you don't want to lose, except that this might go down and I'm not going to sell. Like only put money in that if it goes down, you're not going to panic and sell, because crypto is so volatile. It's so much more volatile than traditional stock market. So if you think like you will panic, then don't buy it. Just put in, like, if you think you're going to panic, if you're going to buy $1,000, just put in $100. That way, if it goes down, you're like, yeah, whatever, it's $100. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of opportunity here. I do think that the future of finance is going to be crypto. I do think that crypto is going to give banks a run for their money. You can, at this moment, borrow money online without any credit checks just by depositing your crypto as collateral. There's platforms like Nexo, which I'm a user of. Celsius is another platform, and BlockFi. These are three platforms that you can deposit Bitcoin. Let's say you deposit $100 of Bitcoin, and you don't have to sell it, and you can borrow up to like 40, 50 bucks off like US dollars. You can do whatever you want with that US dollars. You can put it in your bank account. You can spend it, whatever you like, and then you just have to pay it back. And as long as the Bitcoin value doesn't drop by 50% down to the, like, basically what you borrowed, you'll be fine. This is unheard of. Like, there's no such thing that exists like this in traditional finance. You can also be your own bank. If you, let's say you put in, you have some coin, let's say, for example, Ethereum, you can actually put Ethereum into a liquidity, what's called a liquidity pool on Uniswap, or like the poor man's version is called Pancake Swap, which is made on Binance. You can buy Pancake Coin, and it all sound, all the coins sound funny. Or Sushi Swap, there's a website called Sushi Swap. You can buy any of these like coins, and you can become the bank. So you can put US dollars on Pancake Swap or on Sushi Swap or on Uniswap, and you will get a share of all of the fees for people trading the coin. So you can be the bank. With Nexo, like I have some Bitcoin on Nexo. I earn like, I think 8% interest on my Bitcoin. So not only do I make money if Bitcoin goes up to 60,000 again, but I also get interest because they lend out the money. Like I said, you can borrow the money. This is completely unheard of with traditional finance. Like anyone can be a banker and you can own the bank. You can be part of, and like 8% or 4% or whatever it is way more than you'd make with any traditional bank. So honestly, I do believe that the fundamentals of crypto are good. If I were you, if I had some money, I would buy some crypto. I do think that it's here for the long run. It's here to stay. Don't put more than you can afford to lose, and you'll be fine. And I'm just going to end on that. I'm just going to see the comments quickly. And so Bitcoin's going around 36,000. Doge, you can only buy it if you're willing to, like, you know, hold. I don't know. I just stay away from it. That's it. That's all I have to say for today. I don't touch crypto. Useful for crime, I'm sure. Actually, this is one of the biggest misconceptions out there. Bitcoin used to be useful for crime, let's say. But now it's not. Like, Bitcoin has, it's so analyzed that, let's say, for example, I do some ransomware scam and I want to get some Bitcoin and people send me Bitcoin. That Bitcoin wallet that I said send the coins to, everybody can see what's in that wallet. And those coins are now tainted. So you won't be able to get rid of those coins. There's nothing you can do with them. If you deposit them on Coinbase, Coinbase will lock your account, will contact the authorities. If you try to, anyone that touches those coins, they're basically damaged property. You can't get rid of them. It was supposed to be anonymous, but it ended up being like completely the opposite. So there are privacy coins people have come up with, like Monero, Zcash, and blah, blah, blah. Those coins probably, you know, are more useful for like laundering money and stuff like that. I don't know anything about that. I don't go on a dark web. But like I'm talking about in the traditional coins, like let's say other than the privacy coins, there's a lot more like valid use cases for them than illicit use cases. Because the open blockchains, anyone can see who's sending. I mean, you don't know who's sending to who, but like if someone flags that coin as like laundered money, you'll never be able to use it. You're screwed basically, right? So it is what it is. It's not, I think it's more useful, not for crime, but for like other uses, store of value, money transfer, stuff like that. Hey John, nice to see you again. Hope we will have more live streams soon. I hope the Prince of Saudi Arabia wants to get rid of Hadith. Yeah, I heard something about this, but I don't know the details, right? Regrettably, the scientific miracles narrative has become an intellectual embarrassment for Muslim apologists, including myself. For sure, for sure. All right. Stop baiting. End the stream. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your donations as well. And thank you to my patrons as well for the support. And all you guys, love all you guys. Mwah, mwah. Even my haters, thanks for coming and helping the algorithms. looking forward to the next two Abdullah's stream. I will try to organize as soon as possible. I know we're all missing Abdullah Gondal very much. And see you in the hereafter. Bye.